Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. We're at the fire of Bungellini and also my good friend Jane. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Robbie.
How are you going?
I'm really well. Great to see you.
So you've been very busy working on stuff.
Yeah, you definitely keep me busy, that's for sure.
Good on you. Thanks. Thanks for all the hard work you do. So what are we up to here on our Camp Sovereignty plan?
Our plan, well, after the unfortunate events of the neo-Nazi attack, it's actually been an incredible sort of unveiling of, you know, facts and obligations that have sort of come to the forefront in terms of these layers of authority, council, government agencies that all have an investment in this piece of Crown land. And it's in some ways it's an awful thing, but it's done us a favour because it's given us a level of transparency ourselves about how we've been approaching the problem, and we've done it with sort of respect and trust in these organisations and how they might respond in a reasonable way. But, you know, we're
Have you learnt much about the way it operates?
Well, as I've said to you many times before, Robbie, I thought you were a conspiracy theorist. And unfortunately now I have to agree with you that it's a very strange...
relationship?
It's weird. But it also forces us to problem solve in more creative ways. So I guess... You know, our latest move has been to write a sort of a more strongly worded letter to the council after their sort of underwhelming response to us.
Indifference? Is that the word?
Condescending probably is the word.
That's probably a better word, yeah.
Yes, jumps to mind. The letter they wrote to us after the neo-Nazi attacks and sort of admitting they'd dropped the ball on this and... You know, they sort of sent out an email to half the working group and we've written them back quite a strongly worded sort of reply to say, hang on a second, you haven't included, you know, the working group that you'd promised us back in February. You've, you know...
It's very divisive, but that's just normal for them, I guess, standard.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they have legal obligations under the Closing the Gap priority reforms and under their reconciliation plan to actually consult and include a much broader cross-section of the community, not just the traditional owners.
Do you wonder why there's a gap in between? Understand the gap a little bit better, you know, what happens? And
yeah, but it's... I mean, I can see it in, you know, the FRV, the police, you know, they all are signatories to these priority reforms and reconciliation plans, but they don't have necessarily, you know, cultural training... You know, it was interesting even seeing the detectives they sent down after the neo-Nazi attacks. Like, I actually asked the detectives if they'd actually had any cultural training. I asked the FRV guys that regularly attend the, you know, fire yesterday when I dropped into the South Melbourne fire station. And, you know, they say, no, we haven't had cultural training. No. It's like, why would you send three male detectives down to interview, you know, women, Indigenous women who have actually been attacked, like...
Traumatised.
It's quite strange. But, you know, at the same time, as you always sort of bring it back to this idea of education, and education starts with, you know, conversations and listening and exchanges. And, you know, I had a really positive conversation with the FRV yesterday. We've invited them to come up and for Robbie to have some sort of... you know, exchange around fire law and to try and understand what the issues are. I mean, this is a site that they attend to on a weekly basis because community members actually ring up. And, you know, I asked this fiery, what did you think the camp was about? And he said, oh, I thought they were protesting about black deaths in custody. But he didn't actually know that it was, you know, Camp Sovereignty or the King's Domain resting place is actually a grave site. He had no knowledge of... So I've actually sent him all of our documents, some education material, and invited them to come up. And, you know, I mean, it's tokenistic at the end of the day, but I think every time you have an exchange, you know, there's a level of understanding and education, you know, that you have the chance to further. And so I guess it comes back to, you know, what we are asking of the government. Robbie and I met up with the state Indigenous minister.
Natalie Hutchins
and two of her
quite pleasant
members.
I enjoyed that little...
Well, she gave you lots of compliments, Robbie.
She did.
She really acknowledged your role in the community, and I thought she was really respectful and listened to us about what we're asking for at the camp. But unfortunately, we had to sort of tell her that, you know, our next move is to take all four layers of this statutory protection to potentially the federal court if they're not going to respond to our quite reasonable demand of a disabled access to the site and some permanent facilities that support, you know, maintenance and ongoing cultural use of camp sovereignty space. And, you know, at the very least to provide the disabled access and some sort of solution to the storage so that, you know, cars don't have to be illegally on the site, that elders don't have to be driven up or anyone with a disability driven up to the top of the site. So I think Natalie was quite taken aback at, you know, what our next move is, that, you know, we're happy to go to more mainstream media, that we're happy to take legal action if we need to. I guess the reason I'm talking to Robbie today is we would also like to invite the community to also assist us with putting some pressure on Melbourne City Council. And they have what's called a Disability Advisory Committee, the DAC. So it's a formal group that advises the council on access and inclusion issues. And it's interesting to note that Councillor Olivia Ball is actually the deputy chair of this group. But we would love to invite listeners to, you know, if they've had an experience at Camp Sovereignty, especially if they've personally experienced any disability or access issues getting up onto the site. I mean, it's a sort of 5 metre high difference between the tan track and the Camp Sovereignty actual space at the top. So we've got an email and a mobile number. So the contact person is, let me put on Robbie's glasses, Vicky
spell it.
It's a Greek name. You'd think I'd know how to spell this. Feretopoulos. She's the senior policy officer and access and inclusion person. There's a text or phone number, a mobile number, which is 0447 609 20. That looks like it's, is that enough numbers? I'll repeat that. It's 0447 609 20.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. And an email, which is vicfer, F-I-C-F-E-R, at melbourne.vic.gov.au. And I guess, you know, writing an email to them that's not an email from Robbie and myself is probably helpful to, you know, really put some pressure on this Disability Advisory Committee to have the council honour their obligations to create inclusive spaces. And at this point, they've watched this space be used for the last 2 years with incredible events, community events of film, celebration, ceremony, cultural activities, dance, and
concerts.
You name it. Daytime events, nighttime events. So really they have, I would say, you know, under their sort of safety provisions, a legal obligation to create safe and inclusive spaces. And that would include lighting, you know, certain things around security, cameras, disability access, and, you know, certain facilities up there that would make these events a lot easier.
I reckon we've made the space, enhance the space, you know, and the use of that space. you know, it was hardly ever used, that area there, you know.
No.
I remember talking to the commander of the police. He said, I've been working in this area for about 25 years. I never knew nothing about that space there. He knew nothing of that site. So it just gives you an idea. And, yes.
Well, even the heritage consultant from GML who was employed by the council to assess the space, when I spoke to her, she, you know, when she was taking a tour of the botanical gardens, she didn't even know it existed. So she didn't actually include it in her heritage assessment for the council. Maybe that's one of the reasons they've taken it offline.
Okay.
So, but at the same time, she pointed out, as I've mentioned on here before, that, you know, when you talk about sort of use and bylaws, if there's a precedence, if the space has been a corroboree site, if it's been a mission, if it's been an Aboriginal reserve and there's a history of Indigenous camping there, the council actually, you know, have no legal grounds to ask anyone to move along. Because the space has been activated in a really peaceful way. I mean,
and it's an important site because, you know, like it's in the avenue of all the other war memorials, like the shrine. There's a number of others. War recognition of wars there.
Yeah,
and you could say that our site is a recognition of our war too. It's a burial place of remains that were removed from Melbourne University.
I think in other institutions as well. I don't think
it's
just
a museum. And
yeah.
So it's like our war memorial, which is out of sight, out of mind, which, yeah, it's probably, makes sense when we're talking about Australia.
And that's one issue we discussed with the federal Indigenous Minister, McCarthy.
Mallandary.
Yeah, Mallandary. Her senior advisor also pointed out that, you know, it is, I mean, I explained to him that we'd actually spoken with Bob Carr, who's the chair of the Heritage Council, and, you know, he said, well, it's interesting that you know, really you should just be focusing on precedence. If it's a whole heritage site, the whole Melbourne Parklands and Memorial Precinct, why is it that every other memorial has, you know, signage, wheelchair access, lighting. It almost feels deliberate. Even the marker, the sign, the little map when you approach the path from off the botanical garden track, there's every other memorial is actually shown on that map, including the Queen Victoria across the road that has the boarding around it. And Camp Sovereignty isn't even marked on their map. It's like it's completely invisible, deliberately.
No signage.
There's no signage. And, you know, we're asking some pretty basic things. That's what, this senior advisor from, you know, this federal level was surprised about. He said, so really you're just asking for a sign, you know, a permanent fire, some storage and a disabled access. And, yeah, that's what we're asking for. But I said the number of moves they've sort of deliberately made to block these requests and to not reply to our emails, our presentations, our access to grants. So now we're having to be creative about how we actually, you know, set up a sovereign group to apply for these grants and, you know, and how we actually choose to engage with them.
Sounds very exciting. What else do we want to add to our discussion today about Camp Sovereignty? And just a reminder that people should contact the Melbourne City Council and ask about the disability access to Camp Sovereignty.
Yeah, to contact the Disability Advisory Committee.
Try that name.
If people could actually have a go at writing an email to Vic Fer, FICFER at melbourne.vic.gov.au.
That's Vicky.
Right, Vicky. That's right, Vicky. Yeah. Just to put in writing, you know, so that they're not just hearing from us about personal experiences of, you know, accessibility to.
Oh, there's no way in the world, if you was in a wheelchair, there's no way you could access that site. There's no way in the world you're risking your life on that incline there. So, you know, it should be done straight away without all this having to push it like this, you know. It just tells me the criminal neglect that this country has for Aboriginal people, not in so many different ways. Anyway.
But also the lack of, you know, genuine and authentic engagement with community. I think that's probably the most worrying part, that, you know, they signed their signatories to these reforms and which aren't advertised on any of their sort of websites, or the public aren't made aware of it. And I think they, you know, hide behind this concept of cultural heritage acts and traditional ownership as a way to not actually engage with how, you know, spaces are being appropriated and used in such a positive way. I mean, you know, members of the council have, you know, observed and made comments that it would be fantastic to be sort of an extension of, say, Moomba events or other sort of city-run events, and yet we're not, the group hasn't been formally invited or given the support that would, you know, make those occasions, you know, fantastic and better supported, and access to grants and, yeah, it's really disappointing that they're not actually proactive about engaging when we've given them all the information, you know, drawings, documents, opportunities to actually work with us as a working group to invite different sort of parts of the community to have their say and share their ideas. And not just that, we're actually coming up with the solutions for them. We've done the work for them. We've got drawings, we've got ideas, we've got we've done analysis. We're looking at the site. We're giving them. We're documenting all of the fantastic events that are happening. And the number of times we see the public sort of approach the site, or tourists wondering what's going on. It's pretty basic stuff. And it's, you know, it's disappointing that, you know, as a main city like Melbourne in this country, you know, and where that the precinct actually is between all of the arts, you know, sort of buildings and Sydney Meyer Music Bowl, all of the sort of sports events across the road, and the amount of money they pour into these, you know, venues and having these blockbuster events like Grand Prix and, you know, blockbuster events by the NGV across the road. Looking at the way the M Pavilion's maintained across the road, it's so infuriating.
It is.
To be ignored to this extent. It's
And knowing that the Aboriginal people have such a rich cultural history here.
Yeah, it's Victoria. Such a wonderful opportunity.
And yet who wouldn't even know we existed, you know?
Exactly.
So, you know, we want a cultural interpretation centre for that space there.
That's right.
What else did we want there? And, you know,
I think it's a, you know, as you have mentioned many times before, this site represents the 38 tribes of Victoria. So it's really about inviting those 38 tribes to participate, to contribute, to put in ideas about, you know, seating, art, sculpture, landscaping, you know, education, whether it's this interpretation pavilion that we'd love to sort of put on the space, whether it's landscaping ideas.
All of that. A showcase in Aboriginal culture throughout Victoria, because those 38 tribes or clans or nations, whatever you want to call them, they're the ones who actually paid for the city of Melbourne. They built it out of their resources. So, you know, where is it reflected that it's not at all? We don't exist in their eyes, really. So, you know, it's really just, it's tokenism, really, for those things that we're asking for. And, you know, we expect to get that. And we've got a few wines in the fire, is that right?
We do.
Make it happen, yeah.
We do. So, we can't share those yet, Robbie.
Not yet.
No,
so,
but
we're not asking
still,
for too much.
I guess what we're asking from the community, though, is an engagement. You know, we're sort of, I guess, making these moves up as we go along. And, you know, we'd really like to invite any sort of professionals or people with insight or, you know, skills to, I guess, contact Robbie and, you know, offer some other sort of suggestions about, you know, engagement, whether it be around planning, policy, the legalities of what Melbourne City Council are doing. You know, we would really appreciate some additional support.
Yeah, and I think that's going to happen, Jane. I've got a feeling that things have changed. So let's keep on creating this vision. And I think it's a perfect opportunity for the city of Melbourne. You know, I can see it being a tourist mecca right there.
Yeah.
For Aboriginal people to showcase our culture here.
And that's the thing, I guess, Melbourne City Council need to realise is that camp sovereignty isn't going anywhere. No one's leaving, whether someone's camping there or spending time there or not. You know, that sign is staying, the flagpole's up, that space is activated. You know, it's used on a weekly, daily basis, really, by a really large community that can sort of expand from one or two people being at the camp up to hundreds, as we saw, you know, a few weeks ago at the wonderful event.
And the whole country, Aboriginal Australia, is looking at camp sovereignty too. There's a lot of admiration for what we're doing there. And I think it could be a prototype for what can happen elsewhere, you know.
That's the thing. We have kept, you know, these documents and our process, as a prototype that can be shared with any community around the country that would like to do something similar. We're very happy to share, you know, our approach and, you know, for that to be copied.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bunjil's Fire radio show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bunjil's Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.